Good afternoon to all our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week again I'm joined by our co-host, Mona Hill, and our guests today are Megan McElmoyle and Mahalia Scott from Planned Parenthood Regina. So, good to have you here. And Mona, what are we going to talk about?
I'm here too. And they're smiling, sitting here. Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Welcome. Planned Parenthood Regina is where you both work. And we're going to get into talking about maybe a bit of the history of it, the use of it, why people visit you, and a lot of issues that are current, particularly politically right now. Before we do that, I'd like to just read something off here. It's a flyer that the Regina, Jim, what's it called? Help me out here.
Oh.
The Regina.
I'm sorry, you got me. I was
in
another
Thursday,
world here.
On Thursday, yeah. It's about the housing crisis. Anyway, Canada's facing a housing crisis, as we all know, and it's particularly evident in Regina, with over 7,000 households living in unsuitable dwellings, dwellings that haven't been fixed up. I know that there actually is quite a bit of, at least it looks to me like there's a bit of renovation going on in Regina, but I think it's still a big issue. There's no cheap housing in Regina. Rents rose from an average of $539 in 2006 to $752 in 2009, which is a 40% increase in 3 years. Rental housing is very difficult to find. Rental apartment vacancy rate in Regina fell to under 1% in 2008 and 2009. There seems to be little improvement for forecasting for next year. The number of rental apartments has declined, with little new rental construction and the conversion of existing apartments to condominiums. Housing is unaffordable for many. In 2006, 15,600 households in Regina spent 30% or more of their income on shelter, a level that indicates unaffordability. 41% of tenant households devoted more than 30% of their income to shelter. There is a lot of substandard housing in Regina. Their dwellings are in need of major repairs in the central area of the city. In the latest survey, 15% were substandard housing. And then we move to homelessness altogether. In Regina, an estimated 345 people slept in homeless shelters every night, with close to 3,000 in homeless centers at some time during the year. In May 22, 2008 count in Saskatoon found 260 individuals homeless, including 32 children. A recent Salvation Army survey found that approximately 1 in 9 Canadian adults chose to live, or close to 3 million people, said that they have experienced homelessness or come close to experiencing homelessness in their life. In Saskatchewan, the figure is 1 in 5. And we look at housing and social justice. Individuals and families at low and middle incomes are often unavailable to find affordable and adequate housing. At the same time, many homeowners and real estate interests have benefited from rising house prices. Poor quality housing and homelessness are clear threats to health. Housing is a necessity for living a healthy life. Living in unsafe, unaffordable housing increases the risk of many health problems. Children living in low-quality housing are more likely to have poor health as children and adults. Action is needed now. There will be a rally on Tuesday, May 18th at noon at the Legislative Building in Regina. It's being organized by the Regina Anti-Poverty Network and is part of the Red Tent Campaign, a national campaign to end homelessness. And we turn to talking about this with your Member of Parliament. Write to your Member of Parliament, phone your Member of Parliament, email your Member of Parliament to vote for Bill C-304. That's Bill C-304, which is a plan to create a national housing strategy. And so that's the announcement I wanted to make before we move on to Megan and Mahalia from the Regina Planned Parenthood organization, right?
Right.
Welcome, ladies.
Thanks.
Thank you. It reminds me of Mahalia
Jackson.
Yeah. So pronounce it again.
Mahalia.
That's so beautiful.
So there's no I at the end.
That's right. I'm pronouncing
okay.
it wrong. It's just lovely, though.
Thank you.
How long have you worked at Planned Parenthood?
I've been working at Planned Parenthood for 2 years now.
And you are a youth educator, right?
Right.
That's part of your program. You completed your undergrad degree in Women and Gender Studies at the U of R mm-hmm. last year. You have a certificate in intercultural leadership at the First Nations University of Canada. You're currently enrolled in after-degree Indigenous Education Program at First Nations U. So you've had a lot to deal with lately.
Yeah. Camping out at the First Nations University with my daughter and niece.
I'm sure it's not been fun.
No, it hasn't. But it's a great way to build community and for families to get together with their kids and just informally network and...
Right. And do some social activism at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So your program, you work with young women ages 11 to 14, and it's called Young Women's Wellness, or it's also known as Girl Zone. That's pretty cool, GRRL Zone. Megan, you've been with Planned Parenthood for over 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you're also a youth educator. So what's your role as a youth educator?
I am the person who goes out and does the bulk of presentations in schools and group homes, rural communities, reserves, all over, wherever people have us. That's a big part of my job. Mm-hmm. And the other part of my job would be working with our youth group, youth educating about health, the YA group. It's for anyone ages 14 to 29, so that's been a big part of just getting the group going again and getting a base of people, and we're starting to put things together and come up with some cool stuff.
So. Okay. So was this a group that had been together in the past, and then did you lose funding?
In the past, yeah. It's been in the past. It's been quite project based and depending on funding. This is the first time that we've ever had a full time position for an educator at Planned Parenthood. So that's been the past year.
Where does most of your funding come from?
Well, it depends on what it's for. Our funding for my project comes from from PHAC, from the Health Agency of Canada, Public Health Agency of Canada.
So it comes from the federal government?
Yeah, from the federal government.
All right. And what about your program, Mahalia? There was some information you sent me about it losing funding, actually, from the school board or something?
Yeah, we a couple years when I first... got the job, we ran it as an after-school program, partially funded by the Regina School Board, public school board. But this past year, in September, they cut their funding. So we've found other sources of funding and are now starting the programming up again today.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So it's what a great introduction. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read something here because... you talked about getting funding from the federal government, and I find that interesting because Planned Parenthood is an advocate of legalized abortions. So I want to connect this to something that's been going on recently. On Monday at a meeting of GA development ministers in Halifax, Canada said its maternal and child health initiative, which is expected to be a centerpiece issue at the G8 summit in late June, will not include funding for abortion. Canada's contribution to maternal and child health may involve various interventions, including family planning, which includes the use of contraceptive methods. The details remain to be determined, however. Canada's contribution will not include funding of abortion, said Bev Oda, Canada's Federal Minister of International Cooperation. This is from the Toronto Star, by the way. Oda said, "We're not debating abortion. We're clarifying family planning." That comes from CBC News. The Government of Canada agrees with the internationally accepted definition of family planning, as agreed to by the WHO, the UN, and G8 development agencies. This includes a woman's ability to space and limit her pregnancies, which has a direct impact on her health and well-being, as well as the outcome of each pregnancy. This is what Devota was stating. And then she announced the clearest statement yet on the government's position on the issue, a position which the government has appeared to modify several times in the face of opposition from domestic political opponents, as well as international allies. And then the last we might add is, I'm sure most of our listeners are aware of this statement by Secretary of State for the U.S., Hillary Clinton. You cannot have maternal health without reproductive health, and reproductive health includes contraception and family planning and access to legal, safe abortions. So what are we looking at here? We're looking at the fact that Planned Parenthood Regina is actually funded by the federal government, and abortion is legal in Canada, so that's not an issue. But for some reason, and this isn't something we're going to get into a lot today. I really wanted to focus on Planned Parenthood itself, but I wanted to link this to what's happening currently politically. So there you have it. Have you had any fallout or anything like that in your organization regarding this issue?
We've had lots of informal discussions about it around coffee tables and with girlfriends and around the office. It's a tough thing to even comment on just because of the, I believe it was called the chill, that has been mentioned in a few different articles that we've been reading too, and talking about how a lot of women's organizations that do support advocacy and abortion rights, they've had their funding cut, right. You know, so it's almost kind of a silencing effect that this is what the problem is and we can't even talk about it for risk of, you know, being one of those groups that gets their funding cut.
Right.
Which enrages me on a lot of other levels, but...
Well, and I believe it should enrage everyone, because if we're looking at supporting human rights for every person, yeah. And mm-hmm. women's rights are starting to become suppressed, women's rights to health measures and health care, and unfortunately, for many women who do have to seek out abortions... They're not entitled to it, according to our government, outside of our country. They'll fund it in the country, but not outside. And you're right, they are sort of underhandedly, and there's been some public announcements, too, that they're just cutting funds left, right, and center to women's groups.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how does this affect your agency? Are you concerned about the future of it? Or?
Well, we've always been quite... secure in the past, and we've seen nothing but growth coming out of our agency up until this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something positive.
That is positive. Yeah. It's great. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't have this position if, mm-hmm. You know, if that hadn't been the case. Like, we started off in 1986 completely as a resource center, and we funded ourselves by our $5 annual memberships and selling zucchini cookbooks. So, I mean, to go from that to a full-on sexual health clinic,
right.
and also providing mm-hmm. contraception and having developing an outreach portion of it, too, I mean, mm-hmm. it's good. So I don't want to lose my optimism, but
right.
I am concerned about the fact that this isn't something that we can talk about.
Well, let's talk about the outreach portion of it. You said you go into schools. Talk to young people, you go out and take rural trips out to schools outside of the city, reserves. Tell me about that.
Well, we've had a lot of presentation requests. I was going through and counting them up for reporting purposes, and I think in the past six months we've done 67 presentations in schools and group
okay.
homes and stuff like that.
And what would be in that type of presentation? What type of information would you impart on the young people?
Well, it kind of depends. I've actually kind of changed the presentation styles a little bit from how I was taught. Before, our presentations were much more kind of fact-based, and of course we still go over facts, but I kind of figure if I have an hour with a group of young people to talk about their sexuality and their sexual health and things that should be a concern. I've got 1 hour with these people to try to make an impression on them. And I have noticed that I get a lot better response when you can actually just talk to people, just open up that dialogue. There's and make people realize that these are things that actually connect to themselves and let them give them the space to discover how that connects to them and how they can take a more active role,
right.
Being proactive about their health.
You know, going back to the 60s when I was a young person, the very early 60s, I think. I was one of the few young women who had access to any type of conversation about my sexual health and my own sexuality because I was very fortunate to have a very forward-thinking mother. But not all my friends were, and all my friends came to my mother to talk about their sexual health. And I'm wondering, you know, I see a big difference in the media. I see a big difference in young people, in women's attitudes towards their bodies, towards sexuality. But at the same time, so one might think that there's a lot of information and that they're very well educated. But if you turn it around and you look at the teenage pregnancy rate, is still very high. Mm-hmm. They're not using birth control, obviously, or birth control isn't working, or something is going on. Mm-hmm. I would have thought that by now, young women would have had the ability to be able to protect themselves. And once again, you were talking about STIs, and then there's HIV and that sort of thing. And there's a lot of questions going on as to why young women are not protecting themselves. And then you also can take that to why are not young men protecting the young women they're with and protecting themselves, if you're going to talk about unplanned pregnancies and you're going to talk about STIs and diseases that will actually kill you.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Has anything changed?
Well, I just find, like, even when I was shopping for my daughter for a bathing suit, it was hard to find a one-piece bathing suit. And, you know, these short shorts are really in. And I had a hard time finding longer shorts for an 8-year-old girl. And so I think there's, like, a lot more kind of objectification of young girls. And
so how do young girls handle that?
Ask McLean's.
Yeah. The cover of McLean's, I think it's young women nowadays, is there nothing left inside? And when I saw the cover, I felt like, oh, that's not true. There's so much young women have to offer. But when I was reading the article, like, actually those are a lot of the issues that young women do face in the Young Women's Wellness Program.
Okay.
So I think it's really important for our program and for, you know, talking about what they're passionate about and, you know, valuing their bodies and their worldview and self-esteem and, you know, body image. These are serious issues that young women are facing. So.
Right. Are young women able to talk to their parents yet? Or is something like your program sort of like a godsend to them where they can finally talk openly? Are parents still not able to talk to their kids about sexuality, about their bodies?
I don't even know if it's about abilities. I think that there is a lot of information out there, and that's kind of one of the reasons why I've kind of changed my presentation style a bit, is that I'm finding a lot of youth, they're like, yeah, I know how to put on a condom. Yes, I know what an STI is.
So the mechanics and that sort of thing.
I always tell people, it's, you know, I consider that stuff sort of like the meat and potatoes of sexual health, and these are things that are important to know. But you can know everything under the sun that there is to know about sexual health, but if you can't relate it to yourself as an individual and have that affect your confidence in your ability to make healthy decisions or your will to make healthy decisions, and it's, you know, it's kind of making that connection, I guess, between the facts and making them apply to people. And I've found working with the younger youth and then also working with the older youth, you know, in their 20s, this is still something that we're dealing with. It's largely self-esteem. It's confidence. It's realizing that your actions have consequences and your inactions also have consequences as well, and talking about it, having that space for open dialogue to, you know, have people kind of shout out what they're talking about, not worry about being judged.
Right.
And, you know, they sort it out themselves, you know, when they're given that space and time and that respect to be able to sit down and talk like a human being and be respected, not with don't do this, don't do that, this is terrible, and a bunch of statistics and scary
right.
pictures, you know.
Right. And is there support from their families, do you think?
I think a lot of people do have support from their families. I can also remember being 15, and I had a very supportive mother.
Mm-hmm.
I still do.
Yay.
But it's still, yeah. And there's not a lot like that out there. But
so there really isn't a lot.
Well, it's hard to tell. Everyone's got their unique relationships, and
yes.
and the dynamics are going to be different. You know, we're all kind of snowflakes. But I always knew that I could go to my mom if I needed information. But, you know, as a 15-year-old, you're trying to figure out your feelings and your values and your views, and you're realizing that some of those are going to be different from how you were raised. And it's kind of hard to have that confidence when you're trying to express someone or something to someone that is just the relationship. It's nothing to do with my mom or that I ever thought, you know, but it wasn't something that I was comfortable talking to her about. I knew about Planned Parenthood. I knew I could go there. I knew where I could get resources.
Well, that's good. That's
yeah.
good. So you do a lot of outreach.
Yeah.
How did you find out about Planned Parenthood when you were young? Was it advertising? Was it friends? How did you find out about it?
I found out just through friends, like word of mouth. And
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So who's the average young woman, or are there older women also that come to see you? Who's the average client that you get?
Yeah, and men, too.
And men,
too? We definitely get men.
Well, let's talk about that.
Absolutely. Well, we have a youth focus, we like to say.
Okay.
That being said, we don't turn people away based
right.
on age, but
right.
we do try to encourage young people to come through our doors to look out for their sexual health. And I kind of believe that if someone has a positive experience dealing with their sexual health, then they're more likely to keep up with it. And learn about what their rights are, you know, with their doctors and stuff like that. Encouraging people to find family doctors so that they can look out for other aspects of their health. But we see quite a variety. Probably most people, I would say, between the ages of 14 to 25, late 20s, something
okay.
like that.
Okay.
Yeah, and some younger and some older, guys and girls. Both.
Uh-huh. Okay, so why would men be approaching you? Why would they come to Planned Parenthood?
Condoms.
Okay. And do you give away free condoms?
We'd absolutely give away free condoms.
Okay.
We also have a good selection, nice variety of condoms. We call them the fun ones.
Okay.
Textures and flavors that we sell for quite cheap at cost.
Oh, okay.
So it's $3 for a dozen compared to, you know,
drugstore cost
14 in
right.
a drugstore or something like
right.
that. So
it's good that it's so accessible.
We've really our staff have put a lot of effort into kind of making condoms cool. We've
okay.
got a new condom campaign that's out. I don't know if it's in the buses yet or not, but it's hitting the streets soon anyway. About being a rubber lover.
Oh, okay. Well, I think it's important to make it interesting. And perhaps fun, because I remember being a young mom and having my kids sitting in the kitchen one day. One of them said to me, "Mom, why is it whenever you talk about sex, you act like it's fun?"
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "'Cause it is." With the right person, at the right time,
yeah.
under the right conditions.
Sure.
There's nothing
yeah.
wrong with it, and it's great, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why we're here, because of it, you know.
Exactly.
So I think it's a great thing that you're giving the kids an opportunity to see it as something that's not just something to be hidden and talked about, you know, behind closed doors.
Yep.
Because it is a part of our everyday life.
Absolutely. It's how we all got here.
Exactly.
Yeah. What about emotional health? You know, we've talked about sexual health and about the health of our bodies, our physical health. What about emotional health when it comes to young people who show up at Planned Parenthood? How do you deal with that issue when it comes to human sexuality? maybe what we'll do is we'll take a break. We have a minute left, Jim's just letting you know. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about that when we come back from the break.
Sure.
That be okay?
Yeah.
And that was B.B. King and Mahalia. No, poor dad. I got confused there. That Gloria Estefan. We got Mahalia and Megan. We're going to be talking to them in a minute, but I just want to talk about Membership Month here at CJTR. You're invited to become a member of Regina Community Radio and get these benefits. The satisfaction of supporting Regina's best and proudly alternative radio station. The ability to apply to program your very own show. A say in the direction of the station. An exciting multicultural medium that reflects Regina's vibrant diversity. And discounts at participating local sponsors. Membership is only $25 a year. You can join up at www.cjtr.ca, drop by our studios at 1102 8th Avenue during office hours, or visit the CJTR booth at the Cathedral Village Arts Festival. So that's it. Back to the matters at hand.
Okay, we're back, and we're back with two wonderful women from Planned Parenthood Regina, and we've been talking about their programs. And we've been talking about young women's wellness, or the Girls' Own program that Mahalia Scott runs. Mahalia, I just wanted to sort of highlight a little bit for our listeners a little bit more of what you do besides working for Planned Parenthood Regina, because you've got an extensive... Just real quick, let them know about that.
Basically, we take book donations, and we buy books to send to prisons in Saskatchewan.
You can take your books to where? Where can you take them?
To the SCIC Houston House on
Lawrence Street, isn't it?
McIntyre Street,
yeah. Where else? You're involved with Real Renewal, Wiseall School Age Daycare Board Member, the McNabb Community Association, Prairie Lily Feminist Society, who has been on Human Rights Radio in the past, the Feminist Students Association, and First Nations Students Association. Your interests include, this is awesome, I love this, indigenizing education and popular education designed as a tool to empower, raise awareness, and make changes to how our identities become politicized in regards to race, class, gender, sexuality, religion, and abilities in connection to local and global politics and overarching worldviews and dogma. Wow, what a mouthful. That's amazing. As I said to our listeners, we have some amazing women here. Megan McElmoyle, is that correct?
Yeah.
Did I do that right? besides working at Planned Parenthood, she, as a youth educator, she does a lot of outreach work. The rest of her time she spends working with one of the youth groups at Planned Parenthood and educating them about health, and it's called YEAH, Y-E-A-H. And also, you're a yoga teacher and a volunteer doula. So tell us what doulas do real quick.
Oh, doulas assist women during their labor, providing
during
emotional,
childbirth.
Physical right. support. Yeah,
in the
we
old
don't
days,
deliver
you used
babies.
To call that a birthing partner.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's
absolutely
kind of there to
wonderful.
Advocate for the woman and help to ensure that things go as planned and to provide support if and when they don't.
Wonderful. Yeah. Maybe we'll have a whole show on doulas.
I know a lot of doulas.
That'd
I'm
be
sure
great.
That could be arranged.
Before the break, we were talking about the concept of educating young people about their human sexuality, about their bodies, and about healthy choices. And I raised the issue of emotional health. And Mahalia was talking about that, something that you do a lot of and you talk about a lot of in your young people's program.
Well, with indigenizing education, a lot of the model is recognizing people as holistic beings. And so it's based on traditional indigenous teachings with the medicine wheel. So we have four quadrants of our health and our well-being, and that is spiritual, mental, physical, and emotional. And so we do a lot of education around how each domain interconnects to all domains. And
to create a balanced person, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So keep going. Tell us some more.
Decision-making and communication and assertiveness training are, you know, a part of our program. And and we do a lot of art activities, and this allows for open discussion with the girls to share their stories and their uniqueness and their experiences, and we just talk about how important it is to you know, pay attention to what's going on with our bodies and what's going on with our emotions, and you know, spirituality, and then what's going on in our mind and how they all interconnect.
Right. You talked about assertiveness earlier, a little bit of assertiveness training. That my mind immediately, of course, jumps to learning how to say no.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that, because that's not something a lot of young girls are trained to do from the time they're young, is to say no. We're trained to obey. We're trained to do what we're told.
It's about learning how to say no, but it's also, and maybe not so much with the younger youth, it's a little bit of a different focus, but especially when you're working with older youth who are already saying yes, it's about saying, learning how to say yes too, when,
okay,
and that when everything is right, and learning how
right.
to check in with yourself and your mind, your heart, your body, and to see if things feel
right
good,
time,
if this
right
is the right
place,
choice for you,
right,
and
choice, yeah,
all that, then sure, there's nothing wrong with sexuality. And I think that that's something, I just came back from a conference, Western Sexual Health Conference in Calgary a couple days ago, and there was a lot of discussion about shame and stigma and how that's kind of the cover over everything that we do, and there was a bunch of different people working in a bunch of different areas in sexual health, and this was something that we all kind of dealt with, and something I talk a lot of, to youth, of course I'm with older ones, but talking about how that's why we feel nervous and weird and terrible about talking about this sort of stuff, and why we want to giggle or fidget, because, you know, there's all this shame and stigma surrounding these topics, and so it's not really something that's necessarily embraced. It's something that we kind of hide from.
Right, yeah. And I guess I'm thinking about people who are coercive, you know, when I read the issue about,
for sure,
about learning how to say no to coercion.
Yeah.
And I suppose what you're probably doing too is working on the self-esteem issues, and to have healthy enough self-esteem that you feel okay saying no. I don't have to have this guy in my life or this girl in my life if she's going to be pushy when I'm not feeling like I'm ready. That you have to be able to have that assertiveness to do that. So self-confidence is a huge part of it.
Exactly.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a book that I read a while back titled Just Ask Us. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It was written by a woman from a First Nation group in BC because of the high rate of teen pregnancies, and she couldn't figure out what was going on. So if it's an interesting book. I'm just going to sort of plug it. You can find it. It's a small book. And what she did was maybe similar to what you're doing, is she sat down, she gave girls, young girls, who are single moms, and young boys who are the fathers, or even fathers whose partners weren't involved in the project, the opportunity to come and sit down and talk about why birth control wasn't involved and why there was no conversation about human sexuality, about their own sexuality, what was behind it all. And a lot of it was very interesting. She discovered a lot of it was focused on the lack of conversation within the culture itself, which I think isn't uncommon in a lot of cultures, that it's not openly discussed. You just do it or you don't do it.
For sure.
So I think that what you're doing is incredibly valuable for all young people, regardless of what culture they come from.
I think when you look at our colonial history, too, that plays a huge part. And I know a lot of people maybe don't talk about it or don't know about it, but with the impact of residential schools is very much still alive. And that has resulted in that discourse just isn't there. We can't talk about it. There's been terrible experiences around it. There's no knowledge there, or whatever. You know, there could be a handful of reasons why it would be difficult for parents or elders to bring it up with youth. And I mean, that's just one circumstance too.
Right.
And everyone's kind of, like you said, different.
Right. There's religion-based reasons. There's past trauma
for
and abuse reasons. There's all kinds of reasons.
And they're all
many
really
variables.
Valid.
And they're very,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. They're quite valid. Did you want to talk a little bit more about your program, Mahila?
Well, I was recently awarded a research grant through the Indigenous Peoples Health Research Center to research the effectiveness of the youth program at Planned Parenthood. So I'm really excited to have this opportunity, and I'm really looking forward to this summer and building relationships with youth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's really important. It we've been promoting our program, and we were saying it really helps to go and shake hands with youth and talk to them and tell them about the stuff that we do, and you know, they're really interested. I think it's just great to go out and talk to people. Like,
mm-hmm.
That really helps making connections.
And having open dialogue about the topic.
Yeah.
And not having the attitude that there's things that you're not allowed to talk about. That's a whole important issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just takes me back to the old days with the attitude that, well, if you provide condoms, they're going to start having sex. You know, that the condom is the be-all and end-all, or mm-hmm. birth control is the be-all and end-all to having sex, and having sex is a horrible thing for young people.
Yeah.
And that's the way it was looked at, you know, back in my day when I was young.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Open conversation is so important. Education
yeah.
is so important.
Well, people will pretty quickly realize that if they are having sex for whatever reason, whether it's by choice or not, that, you know, if they fit into that box, you know, all these rules just don't apply to them. Then it's like,
right.
Well, I'm kind of outside of that. It's
right.
You know, so lots of people slip through the cracks. If it's, you know, I guess that's the debate against abstinence only
yes.
education. We kind of like to use the term abstinence plus.
Okay. actually, I like that because if you do decide to be abstinent,
yeah.
obstinate. That's your right. Also, it's a choice that you know, we make our own choices, and that's the beauty of equality. Having
mm-hmm.
equality and for women is the right to make a choice
mm-hmm.
to abstain from sex, or to make that choice to have sex when you want to engage in a loving relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever suits your fancy, so to speak, but to be educated enough to make a healthy choice about it,
yeah.
one way or the other.
For sure.
So that's pretty awesome.
I think I don't know if we mentioned yet or not, but our in the past, our programs, when we were in the school, our youth programs, it was girl zone. We did pilot actually a guy zone project, and then that was right before we lost our funding.
Oh.
So when we decided that we needed to revamp things and we still needed to offer this service to the community, we tried to figure out how we could do it so that we could get so the most young people could take advantage of our program
mm-hmm.
With the limited time and resources that we have. So we do have actually workshops running. We have five left between now and October. We run a guys-only workshop and a girls-only workshop at the same time.
Okay.
So the guys will have guys staff and the girls will have girls staff, but we do the same programming.
So you give them opportunity to come together at any time to talk about it openly?
We probably will.
Okay. I just remember when I was young and we had sex education class
yeah.
in school, and they had a movie for us and about girls' reproductive stuff, and they sent the boys out of the class.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, why would they do that?
Yeah.
I couldn't understand it. Like, what's wrong with my body that the boys can't see it?
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
that for
yeah,
me,
sure.
I just thought, wow, I didn't get it. So, I don't know. I think it's so important to be able to talk about it openly. But I realize that kids get embarrassed. Maybe
yeah.
I was kind of unique. You know, I was never embarrassed, but I know children do get embarrassed.
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, and I guess with the younger group, too, it's not, like, overt sex ed that we're doing with
yes.
them. It's more around decision-making and
right.
Just taking time to be a part of a group and realizing your role within that group. And I think that some of the girls who've been coming, some of our people who've been following us this whole way through, they get that feeling. There's a sense of belonging. There's
Good.
A sense of safety and openness and
yeah.
trust. And that takes a while
sure
to
it
build.
Does.
It doesn't happen quick. And that's kind of, I guess, part of the challenge of,
right.
of trying to run programming, too. It's, you know, when you're not
know,
able to
I know
offer
about
it every
that.
Week.
Yeah. yeah, I do. Yeah, so your ultimate goal in all of this, what's your ultimate goal? As women working for Planned Parenthood?
Create awareness.
Okay.
Awareness, that's what I was thinking, awareness, yeah.
Education and opportunity.
Yeah, well,
right.
we go you know, by informed consent. And so, I mean, we're a pro-choice organization, and we stretch out that choice word as far as we can, you know, to include your choice. This is your body. These are your rights. You
right.
have the right to choice and whatever that is that you choose, and to discover what your own unique needs are as an individual, and find out where you can access whatever it is that you need to access.
You have lots of resources.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. When you go into the schools, are there? Do they give? I know that some schools in the country are offering opportunity for parents to pull their kids out of presentations such as yours or sex ed. Are you encountering that at all? Where some kids might not show up simply because they already know about that?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
Not that I know of. If anything, it's kind of like we come in and answer the tough questions that
teachers
aren't.
That the teachers don't want to deal with.
Yeah. No one wants to talk about anal sex if they have to teach the same kids math 5 minutes later.
Okay.
So it's understandable.
Okay. I can see that happening. Right. The last thing I think we could touch on for maybe 2 minutes that I think is so important is access to legal abortion. Why is access to legal abortion for women so important for their health?
Well, if it saves lives.
How does it save lives?
Let's look at our statistics.
19 to 20 million women resort to unsafe illegal abortions every year. That 13% of all pregnancy-related deaths are due to unsafe abortion, amounting to about 70,000 deaths per year, and that 8 million women experience serious complications from unsafe abortions.
Those are awful statistics.
Well, the thing that really speaks to me, too, is that of those 70,000 women who died due to unsafe abortions, these are women who were in whatever reasons were in a situation where they're risking death and injury. Like, they're to avoid having a child. So there's not, I mean, if you
exactly.
limit a policy based on someone else's beliefs, so we don't know what's going on in people's lives that
That's
would
right.
cause someone to have to make a decision
right.
where they're risking their life, you know, and their family.
Right.
And,
And it's not something I don't believe you see very often, that women actually use abortion as birth control.
No.
It's a huge decision. It's a very emotional
Absolutely.
Decision. It's not something that anyone takes lightly at all.
Yeah.
Very, very seldom.
And even if that were the case, who am I to say that you should make this decision or you shouldn't? It's,
right.
you know,
right.
I guess just respect for diversity and people as individuals,
right.
and we all have unique needs and
exactly.
situations.
Yeah, and it's all about freedom of choice for women.
Can we give a quick plug for our an event that we've got coming
Absolutely.
Up on the 28th?
Yeah.
It's at Cochrane. It's called Because I'm a Girl, 411 TV. It's a multimedia.
Cochrane High School?
Cochrane High School.
Okay.
Yeah. It's at 7 o'clock.
On Friday, the 28th.
Oh, excellent. Thanks. Okay, Jim, it's time to plug the Amnesty International Steak Night. Thank you for being with us, ladies.
Thanks.
As usual, we're out of time.
Okay, but we do have time to talk about Amnesty International's Have a Steak in Human Rights Steak Night at Bushwhacker Brew Pub, 2206 Dewdney Avenue, Regina. It's on Tuesday, June the 1st, and it's from 5 to 8 p.m. We are going to have a 6-ounce sirloin steak with fresh Caesar salad and Bushwhacker homemade fries, garlic toast, a 12-ounce Bushwhacker beer. And for those of you who don't like meat, veggie burgers or chicken and soft drinks, or chicken and soft drinks are all alternative food and drink choices. And let us know in advance if you want an alternate via phone or email. The tickets are $25. They got to be purchased by Thursday, May 27th. Call 586-1938, or you can email gordon.barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S, at amnestysaskatchewan.ca, pardon me, or mona.hill at amnestysaskatchewan.ca. The proceeds will go to Amnesty International to support human rights locally, nationally, and globally. And I'd also like to mention that the SCES, that's the exchange, they're cleaning up from a flooded basement, and they're looking for volunteers to lend a hand. If you can help with the cleanup, please call Sandra at 501-2854. Thanks for helping out the Regina Cultural Exchange Society. And now I have time to close the program.
Wonderful. Bye, everybody. And thank you, ladies, from Regina Planned Parenthood Program.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. Every day and every moment in every corner of the world, injustice cries out for your intervention. No one individual can respond to all the problems of the world, of course. To paraphrase a great humanitarian, if you can't help everybody, just help one. And whether the abuses stop immediately or take a long time to end, the gift of your attention and intervention can make a profound and positive impact on the ability of individuals and communities to endure and prevail. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to cjtr.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."